This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and today I'm honored to be joined by an actress who's been a diamond fixture in Canadian entertainment for decades. Award-winning stage, film, and television actress Sonya Smits is truly an icon, a well-known face to Canadian television viewers. Sonya Smits was born on a dairy farm in the Ottawa Valley to Dutch immigrants. She's been a regular on no less than three long-running Canadian TV series, Street Legal, Traitors, and The 11th Hour. She began her career on stage in the theater, and she's performed all across theaters, all across Canada and the United States. And in 1980, she made her television debut as Lisa in the CBC TV movie War Brides, for which she received an actor nomination. The following year, she made her film debut as Mrs. Lind in the Canadian horror film The Pit. Several more films followed, with Smits receiving Genie nominations for her work in Videodrome and That's My Baby. And then in 1986, she was cast as Carrie in the hit CBC series Street Legal, about a team of lawyers. She continued with the show for the next six seasons, and for her brilliant work, she was honored with a Lead Actress Gemini in 1988 and a 1993 nomination as well. A string of TV movies, including The Diviners, for which she received her third Gemini nomination, kept Smits busy before she won the role of Sally Ross on the TV series Traitors, and that was 1996 to 2000. Smits again found herself honored at the Geminis with two more nominations in 1999 and 2000. In addition, she was the 2004 recipient of ACTRA Toronto's Award of Excellence, presented to her by the 2003 recipient and renowned actor Gordon Pinsent. Wow, what a trip that must have been. I love that actor so much too, and have fond memories of interviewing him as well. In 2001, Smits played Kay Thompson in the acclaimed ABC TV biopic, Life with Judy Garland, Me and My Shadows, before taking on the regular role of Megan Redner in CTV's The 11th Hour, a series about the behind-the-scenes goings-on at a television primetime news show. In addition to playing the lead in all of these Canadian TV series, Sonya Smits also played in numerous TV series, including Falcon Crest, Murdoch Mysteries, and Pretty Hard Cases. Her feature films, we've mentioned some of them already, David Cronenberg's cult classic Videodrome, and Owning Mahoney with Philip Seymour Hoffman, How to Deal starring Mandy Moore, A Different Loyalty starring Sharon Stone, and Siblings opposite fellow Canadian actor Nicholas Campbell, and some of her most recent films, 2021, Drifting Snow, Better Days in 2023, and A Mother's Lie 2024. And I can't wait to unpack all of it. Sonya has received numerous awards, honors for her work. As mentioned, Gemini Award for Best Actress. She was the first artist named as president of Harbourfront Centre Board. She was a founding member of ACTRA Women's Caucus and served as a chair at Toronto Artscape Foundation. On the personal side, she's married to acclaimed Canadian film and television producer Seton MacLean, former head of film production for Alliance Atlantis. They have two children, Avalon and Leon. Sonya is also the co-owner of Clausen Chase Vineyards. And I was showing her this wine off the top of the show that I got in honor of this program today. A pioneer in the creation of the viticulture, beautiful region of Prince Edward County. And I've heard wonderful things about it, Clausen Chase Wineries. So really, I couldn't help but thinking that this sort of made it a full circle moment, that you were almost coming back home, as it were, as you were born and raised on a dairy farm in Ottawa, Canada. And so many other things I learned about you, that you're also an equestrian, a lover of horses. You're very active in your community, and that Sonya Smits has always given back. One of the places she's given back to is women's shelters, specifically supporting the Parkdale Women's Shelter, the Redwood. She's a longtime supporter of the Women's Legal Education and Action Fund, LEAF. And I just interviewed producer Alan Schwartz, who said he remembers working with you on LEAF and doing the PR for you on that beautiful charity. My goodness, Sonia, you are not only entertainment royalty in this country, you have grace and grit, you've really given back to Canada, and you're an unstoppable force. Sonia Smits, welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
Thank you.
Longest intro in the history of... I really wondered about the fact that you were born and bred on a dairy farm. And I think that that's something that has impacted much of your career. And I wondered if acting has always been a calling for you, because you said you never wanted to do anything else. Even as a little kid, you spent a lot of time alone on the farm, forcing you to live in the world of your imagination, and you never really grew out of it. Can you tell us more about your childhood on the farm and how being born and raised there perhaps shaped and impacted your journey as an actor?
Well, to your point, I mean, growing up on a farm, and especially, dear God, I'm old enough that we didn't have all the influences or we didn't get a television until I was 12, you know? So, and then it was really restricted as to what you could watch on it. But my mother grew up on a farm, but my mother loved art and exposed us to literature and would read us books at night with Greek mythology. And so filled our heads with all sorts of a world that was bigger than where we lived on the farm. But living on a farm and in the country, it's almost like literally you have space to dream, to imagine, to just run. You know?
Yes, totally.
So
totally.
That's huge, right? And it formed me in a really big way. And to your point with going back to the vineyard, I hadn't sort of realized until we started that I sort of came full circle. It wasn't premeditated at all. It just sort of went, oh my goodness, here, look where I ended up.
Wow. So, and even the Falcon Crest episodes that you did, like that was, you were...
Well, that was at a winery.
So I wondered, was there a little bit of foreshadowing or subconsciously you thought, well, this would be a really cool thing to do?
No, but I did like wine, so...
It worked. It was a good thing. Also, regards from Stephen Rapkin, my oldest childhood friend from Montreal, who of course is at Long Dog Vineyards, which is Victoria and James, and he sends his regards.
They were just the big originals. Oh my goodness. Yeah. All the slogging and the dreams and the, you know, failures and successes, you know.
It's, of course.
It's
of
a course. Lot. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot like acting, isn't it?
For sure, because, you know, you go through some pretty hard times and you think, well, am I crazy? What am I doing? So there's a lot of parallels.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So you did take it seriously, Sonia, and you went to acting school at Ryerson, of course, which is now called Toronto Metropolitan University. And it must have been quite a culture shock, though, I wondered, coming from this cozy and rustic farm in Ottawa to the big city. What was that like for you?
It was huge. Fortunately, I had like a big 2 years in the west end of Ottawa. You know, that was my big sort of city thing. But coming to Toronto and to downtown Toronto, it was rough and it was sort of shocking because I was right there at Jarvis and Dundas. Of course, what you could afford, you know, is a room and a house, right? With a bunch of other students. And like there was a men's shelter up the street. Huh. And there was two strip joints, like, on the corner, one at Jarvis, like basically at the ends of our streets.
Good
like
Lord.
In the old days of the burlesque houses, there was so much going on. And I was an innocent, to your point. But so I would see someone lying on the street, passed out from something, and I would get all upset. And in those days, you didn't have cell phones. I'd use the payphone. I'd go and call the police. And I'd say, there's someone, they're lying on the sidewalk. And they go, yeah, yeah. It's like, but they're lying on the sidewalk. Yeah. Someone should come and get them. I had no idea. But it was a big and exciting and upsetting a little bit.
Yeah, intense. Of course.
For a bit of a change. Yeah.
I can relate to that so much because one of my first jobs was at CBC on Church, and I was the copy clerk who worked the midnight shift from midnight till 8 a.m. And when there'd be some problem, I would say, oh my God, are you okay? And they'd say, that's not your job. Your job is to get the cameraman to the scene. not be a social worker.
Yeah, you're not calling the police every time you see someone. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. One of the projects, Sonia, that you're the best known for, of course, is your starring role as Carrie Barr in CBC TV's Street Legal. And you even credit that as one of your favorite shows of all time, like just apart from your work on it. And you starred in that show, even winning a 1988 Gemini Award for Best Performance by a Lead Actress in a Continuing Dramatic Role. And I think I was there that night. Could that have been at the Metro Toronto Convention Centre? Because I have a strong memory of you winning that award. Yeah. And that was a pretty heady stuff. And when I hear that musical intro, the theme song from season one of Street Legal, it just brings me back to those days in the 80s and really to this incredible new Canadian series that was about to take the world by storm, because you were kind of figuring it out along the way. And it did do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually in a, maybe not a full circle, but in sort of life's irony, on this Saturday, I'm going to a celebration of life of Marijke McEwen, who created Street Legal.
Wow.
Was the original producer and creator of Street Legal.
Oh my goodness.
And she died last winter, but there's a celebration for life of her on Saturday, which I'm so looking forward to being able to pay tribute to her, because in many, many ways, but my relationship with Marijke was cool because I was working. I did a TV movie, a CBC TV movie that she was a story editor on. And it was, you know, the War of 1812 or something like that. It was a period piece. Mm-hmm. And we were talking and she said she had an opportunity, an invitation from CBC to become a producer. She was a story editor, very smart. And her name was Marijke, so she had Dutch background. So we kind of got to know each other through that link. And she was a single mom. And we went for lunch afterwards. And I said, you know, she was telling me about this. I said, you really should go for that because we need more women producers producing television stuff. And then I went off to Los Angeles for a few years. And then I got a call for a Street Legal that she was producing.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a great story. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's a full circle moment.
Yeah.
Can we have a listen? I'm going to ask Eva if she could play the theme song, that original season one theme song for us right now. Let's just roll that clip and have a listen because it really does take you back.
Side, west side, all around the town. Side street, heartbeat, break them on down. Feel that feeling, shuffle your feet. We gotta move, we gotta move.
Oh my gosh, I even get the shivers. What are your memories of doing that first season? Because this was groundbreaking stuff at the time. I remember. This wasn't done in Canada. We had Mosquito Lake and I don't know what, but this was a really successful show, a groundbreaking show. Yeah. And it looked like it could come from the U.S. Not that, I mean, we've got to be proud of our own, but this was one of the first.
Mm-hmm. It was very exciting. And you also felt a certain, I guess, almost like a responsibility because you're going, we're having this opportunity, but we're all sort of having to figure it out.
Yes.
At the same time, like the writers, some of the writers on that original, I'm still friends with, you know, really just trying to figure out what do we need? Like, how even do you end an act, you know, because in those days you go cut to commercial, you know, and how do you create, what are the storylines? And it was really cool. And then what was wonderful was when it went on the air, was people's response, just, you know, Canadians' response to it.
Yes.
How it was so embraced. And that was pretty amazing. Yeah.
Well, people would call out to you in the street and say, Carrie Barr. They would just call out to you like they believe you were her.
Absolutely. They believed very much so. Because also, that was a time that it was on a specific night. So everybody would gather. So they had a kind of communal experience with what was happening on the show. You know, so you were in people's living rooms, and the stories I've had from people over the years, my daughter became a lawyer because of you, or you were the night we were all gathered together and I watched with family. And it was really kind of a unifying thing. And because it was set in Canada, we had our own, we were our our lawyers' robes, and which is different from American television. And we got to see some of our process and legal process and how it works, and our social issues and all of that kind of thing too, which was pretty.
You also, of course, worked with Cynthia Dale, who was a celebrity guest on this program, and with C. David Johnson, and of course with Eric Peterson, who also worked with you playing Leon Rabinovich. You guys had quite a bit of chemistry. You went on to do two more plays with him, The Test and Nothing Sacred. And I love that interview that you both did back in 2011 with Strombo, George Strombopoulos, where Eric Peterson talks about how his favorite part of working with you was looking at you, that you're always beautiful and you never age. And I have to tell you, I've been thinking that this whole time, those cheekbones that enter the room before you do. And really, you're it's amazing. You don't age, you go backwards. You'll have to tell me off camera what your secret is. What was it about the chemistry between you and Eric Peterson that always worked so well? Because there was really something delightful there.
Well, I think, and it's worked on stage with us too occasionally, because I think, for lack of a better word, I'm sort of a good straight woman to his manic energy. You know? And he's really smart and he's really clever and he's really kind of manic, and I kind of can take the whatever out of him when you need to, right?
Totally. Yeah. I saw that. Anyone listening, you should take a look. You can just Google that lovely interview, 2011, Strombo, Sonia Smits, and Eric Peterson. And I also noticed when I went back to season one in the credits, you got to read the credits. They're very important. You know this, being married to Seton, that our beloved friend and makeup artist, the late Jean Crosley, also did the makeup.
Yes.
And I loved her too. And she was my makeup artist for years. And she and you banded together to fix up Nancy Crosley with her husband, Carl Coleman, the tall one.
It was our only super successful matchmaking. And it took months of effort and a manipulation. We're so proud of it.
it's a wonderful one. And of course, they've been married now for 32 years. What are your memories of Jean, who really was a lovely person and such a wonderful makeup artist? And she was just a gem in this industry.
You just spent so much time, because doing a series in those days, I forget, there was some years we do like, I don't know, 12 episodes. Like, it was a long time, like half your year at least was doing that. And we went through, because I was on it for 6 years. And you were at that stage in your life where people got married. One couple got, there was divorce. There were children.
Yes.
There were, our lives were unfolding, and they were unfolding. And with Jean, as a makeup artist, she was a wonderfully talented makeup artist, but she also had such sort of kindness and sympathy. So you could sit in her chair first thing in the morning at 5:30, 6 in the morning, and you could talk and just kind of, she'd share with you what you were going through. And she was such a sympathetic ear, you know?
Yeah. I loved her. And of course, I remember seeing you at Nancy and Carl's 25th wedding anniversary at the Imperial Room at the Royal York Hotel with that long table and those gorgeous candelabras. And of course, the late Doug Crosley, who I thought was every bit as talented as Frank Sinatra. I mean,
singing. Yeah.
Wasn't he? And I remember seeing you there as well. But Nancy, Jean's daughter, who you, of course, became friends with through all this, said the following about you. She said, like I just said, Sonia has incredible cheekbones. She's so angelic. She has a very gentle manner and such positive energy. She's a brilliant actor. And we both talked about what an iconic beauty you are. But she also said you're an angel with the best smile and you're so real.
Aww.
And I think that's what has distinguished you from really, like, if I ask what distinguishes you from all the other actors, I think all of those things might come into the reason.
Well, that's very kind.
When you starred as Carrie Barr in Street Legal, you won that 1988 award for Best Performance by a Lead Actress. And I'm just wondering, what are your memories of that night? Because we never pause. I said this to someone recently, another actor, how important it is to pause and reflect on those moments. We rush to the next audition and the next gig. But if you could take us back to that evening, because I was there. It's now called the Canadian Screen Awards. It was called the Gemini Awards. I believe it was at the Metrotronic Convention Center. What are your memories of winning that? Because that's a very big deal.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because in a way, those things are sort of a blur. You're just there with everybody. And I remember getting my dress made, you know, and there were some people in the wardrobe at CBC who helped me with my outfit and my big hair. I look at the pictures, like my hair was huge because that was the 80s. Your hair could not be big.
Right.
And yeah, it was so, it's sort of more in hindsight that you go, oh, wow, that was wonderful. And also the episode that I won for, it was a bit heavy because that was a sexual assault. My character was sexually assaulted. So we had to kind of work through all the what you show, what you don't show, and the portrayal of that. And again, with that role, whether I won the award for it or not, it was very important to me that it be done. And to the creators of the show, and to Marijke and Brenda, we're on it, is how it was done. And again, with that, then you reach people. I would get letters from people who said it was helpful and all of that kind of thing. So that kind of is what stays with me. And then when I look at the pictures, it was Megan Follows, one for like something.
Yes, too. Yes, yes, yes. I remember, right? Yes, interviewing her as well. Yeah, yeah. She did. She did. Yeah. And this was groundbreaking stuff. I wanted to, it's funny, we have another little clip of in later seasons, the intro changed to this wonderful jazzy saxophone music. And I just wanted to play that because it really packs a punch and shows how really the series evolved so beautifully. And I'm wondering what that was like for you. We keep talking about season one. Let's all have a listen to the theme song 4 years later. You were still on the show and there was definitely a saxophone in this. I heard it. Let's have a listen.
I think the show kind of amped up. Like they brought on Cynthia because they wanted like a heavier duty sort of femme fatale, which she did beautifully, you know. And I think I had, once I knew with the reel, they cut, you know, the joke reel at the end of, you know, the season. And it was how many people I kissed. How many different like screws I had. That's pretty funny. It's like, wow, I really like gone to Cynthia's character was basically the C. David, right? And another.
That's hilarious. That's so cute. You went on to work for another hit series. Mm-hmm. And I found this one interesting because you didn't have any experience in this world. So preparing for a role, I'm talking about Traitors now, is everything for an actor. And I wondered where you found inspiration for the role that you played in Traitors, because it was such a departure from your experience growing up on a farm. It's all about being in the financial world. And you really had to learn a lot about that world, I would think, before you could even begin to create your character. So, Sonia, how do you go about finding and creating a character, whether it's something very familiar or something like Traitors that was really outside of your life experience? Don't answer that just yet. We're going to go on a short commercial break and more with Finding Your Bliss and Sonia Smits when we come back. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio AM 740. Thanks to Ashford Cleaners for sponsoring this segment of Finding Your Bliss. Ashford Cleaners is Toronto's best dry cleaner with hand-finished detailing, laundry, tailoring, you name it, and they'll take care of it while always going the extra mile to make sure you leave with a smile on your face. And they also offer you free pickup and delivery, so it's easy to keep your entire closet ship shape and ready to go. Thank you, Ashford. We've been having a delightful conversation with stage, film, and TV actress Sonia Smits. And just before the break, Sonia, I was asking you how you go about finding and creating a character.
If it's something outside of my, like The Traitors, I actually went down to Bay Street and I researched. I found some women on Bay Street who were very high powered. And I asked them if I could come and hang out with them and spend some time. And they were very, one was Susan Story, she was this beautiful, someone called her a Barbie because she looked like a Barbie doll, but she was so sharp.
Smart.
So smart as whip. And ran a whole group of derivative traders who were like super brilliant guys. But I said, could I look under your desk? And under her desk, she had all Vogue magazines. And under her
desk. I love that.
This kind of rough and tumble, very macho
yes.
world, but very, very kind of leaning into the feminine power, I guess. And the other person was a woman, Colleen Moorhead, who I'm still acquainted with.
Oh, my goodness.
And she started E-Trade. After that, she became a very powerful woman
yes.
in the trading, in the investment world. Yeah.
Wow. Well, she's actually written for our magazine and been involved with this show. I'm so shocked to hear that name. That's fascinating that she
and
was
so
one.
The other person, I went, okay, I found those two, and they were wonderful sources of ideas and caused a bit of a range, too, of character types. And then some of what the hard, fast rules were back in the old days on the trading floor, in the investment, like women couldn't show your arms. You couldn't have bare arms. You had to have it covered. So the big reveal, like third season, I went, I'm going to
like Gypsy Rose Lee, I'm gonna take down a shoulder strap.
All these sort of unspoken rules that are the rules.
Wow.
And then it was also really fun and also some really smart people writing and creating that show who unfortunately lost to the States and they've gone on to win Emmys and things like that.
Wow.
The showrunners on that. Because it took a lot of really smart writing to know that world, to be able to translate it, to have it be exciting drama, right? Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Did those two inspirations, Colleen and the other lady that you talked about, get a real kick out of seeing you on the show and seeing you maybe?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And actually, that world was kind of nicely, they did that investment world, they did something very nice charitably for us because I thought Bay Street was never paying attention to women's issues or women's shelters. But because of my connection to them, they ended up doing something that we raised a whole bunch of money for, like a called Traders Challenge. We raised over $100,000, and all it was a guest spot on Traders.
Oh, my goodness.
And they had to make fake portfolios. And so we got all these like Bay Street guys, you know, supporting a women's shelter probably for the first time ever. So that
wow.
was really fun.
That's all because of you. I'm not surprised.
So
just to go back for a moment, you attended theater school at Ryerson. And after 2 years, you took a summer theater job in Quebec City where director Ken Livingston invited you to join his new company in London, Ontario, Centre Stage. And then when CBC casting director saw the show, they asked you to audition for a CBC movie, Tyler, for the part of a farm girl. And I love this story about how you arrived at this audition to play a farm girl, very nicely dressed in a skirt and heels, proper, kind of like you're dressed today. Most of the other actresses were dressed in pigtails and gingham. And when you were called back for the final audition, they pleaded with you to wear something more farm girlish. And you said, this is how a farm girl would dress for a very important meeting. But if you really want, I'll wear jeans. And once you did, you got the part.
Yeah.
Do you remember that audition and what that whole experience was like?
Yeah, it was exciting, number one, because it was nice to be invited, that the casting people were looking. Because, again, you know, the television industry was just sort of growing there. So most people who were actors were from the theater. You did theater. And so they would go out to London, Ontario to go and see shows and look for people that they thought would be good. And so the effort that they put in to kind of recruit or or search you out and then to go in there. But I would, felt very firm that, of course, I could play a farm girl.
You know, obviously.
But in my own way.
In your own way. And that is the coolest. You went on stages all across Canada. People forget because they think of you as street legal, as a TV actress, as a movie actress. But you really did perform at the Tarragon, Toronto Free Theatre, Canadian Stage Company. You starred in The Graduate. That must have been. Was that a fabulous experience?
That was really a challenge. It was fun to do. It's a classic play.
Yes.
And I did that at the Grand Theatre in London, Ontario. And it was kind of surprisingly empowering eventually once I got to my nerves. And I did it at 50. So, you know, it's like, okay, what the heck? Hey, you got to challenge yourself.
You worked with great people like you did George P. Walker's Nothing Sacred and Judith Thompson's Perfect Pie. And I also loved when I read that you always loved to dance. And even though you may not have always called yourself a dancer per se, you're an actor, but you did study dance and you knew how to dance. You also studied Ashtanga yoga because you always felt as an actor, it was important to keep yourself in shape. So movement has always been important to you. What are you doing these days to move and stay connected to dance and to movement?
I'm not doing dance so much. I'm doing equestrian stuff. You know, like I took up riding. And later on in life to learn, when I grew up, I had a horse, like a pony, but I never really learned sort of formally how to do it as a sport or as a skill.
Wow.
And I took it up a number of years ago and I really, really like it because it's physically demanding, but it also, you have to really know what the horse is doing. It forces you in, to depend and to have a kind of a relationship with the horse. Everything affects the horse. Whatever the horse does affect you. So it's a body thing, but it's also your mind too.
Are you ever afraid? Like, I wondered how, like, that's scary. And I know you've had your ups and downs and I've heard that this is where I got the idea of grace and grit. And I wondered if you could tell us more about your beautiful horse Pacific Way, but also about your fearlessness.
Well, it's funny because sometimes people say, oh, you're brave, you're so strong, but it's not that. It's just, if I'm afraid of something, I will keep at it until I kind of bang it down, you know?
That's
sort of what it is. So with riding, I took up riding after the age of 50. Seriously, I bought a horse. 6 months later, I came off the horse and I broke my hip.
Oh, dear God.
Like really badly.
That's scary. That's scary.
So that was scary. But I thought, I'm not going to give up because that's not the way you do it.
Yeah.
So it took months to repair and I went back at it, but it was scary and it took a while to not have, well, I guess that's called PTSD when you're
of course
into rushes and all of that kind of thing.
Totally.
I eventually got there. So well, it's just like, okay, I want to do it so I'm not scared anymore. And then I did it. So I actually started enjoying it, you know, and it's now I have my third horse now. So you change the horses for kind of where you're at, like that horse, he tripped. So it turned out he had arthritis. So he's happily retired at my friend's alpaca farm.
You can visit him.
And he's fat and happy. And,
isn't that terrific? And you find that keeps you in shape? Like, are you also a walker?
I love hiking. I love staying active. I love, look, I live in the country. I spend a lot of time out in Prince Edward County. And I'll just go for walks. There's beaches. There's through the woods. Mm. Fields, you know.
Sounds like a pretty good life. Sounds like a pretty good life that you've earned, that you've certainly earned. You know what I also love about you, Sonia, is that you still love it. And I know that you enjoyed making these films that I mentioned off the top in 2021, 23, and 24, which is kind of cool because a lot of that was during the pandemic and you still were working. And you once had an acting teacher, Robert Christie at Ryerson, and he told you at the time, when you stop finding the joy in being an actor, get out and leave. And yet you've always found joy in your work, whether it's been in the theater or in successful TV series like Street Legal and Traitors. You've always found joy in your work. And you've said that it's a privilege to be an actor. Can you say more about that?
Well, I believe it is because you're not, how do I say, it's a privilege to be an actor because it's a very difficult thing to get the opportunity to do. A lot of people are good and wonderful and study and try, but don't have the success that they deserve or whatever, because there's so many other things that come into play.
Yes.
You know, there's luck, there's timing, there's just the physicality of your own body and your own face, and whether that jives for the times or whatever, you know. So how many opportunities are there for you? And the last thing that I remember an actor, Michael Hogan, telling me once when I was just starting out, he gave me great advice. He said, what's going to determine if you survive as an actor is not what you do so much when you're working. It's what you do when you're not working.
Wow.
Because there's so many periods in an actor's life when you're not working or when you're auditioning for things and you're not getting the roles. And you're, how do you keep your sense of yourself healthy and protected? How do you, you know, it's very, very, very tough, the ups and downs. How do you get through those downs and not have it make you bitter or all those kind of things? Those are the challenges, right?
How did you achieve that?
And I think I had enough time that I sort of, kind of hit a little bit rock bottom with things not working for me, going through periods of time where I wasn't getting anything. And I think I learned from that. One of the ways I learned, I was young enough because I'd had some success and then I went through a period it wasn't happening and I was getting more and more miserable. And I think it was showing in my auditions, you know, my anger or my, you know, I'm really ticked off.
Yeah.
And so a girlfriend said, come out to Banff. And I worked as a waitress out in Banff. And I was terrible. I got fired. You know, I was a waitress. I was not
Oh, goodness. I can relate. You should have seen me at Toby Goodeats on St. Clair and Young years ago. It was not a good thing. Anyway.
It wasn't too good for me. So anyway, and I came back and I thought, okay, I know I still want to be an actor, but I don't want to ruin who I am.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd do something else. And I signed up for actually a photography course at OCAD.
Wow.
And it was great because with the photography course, you weren't looking at yourself. You were looking through a lens at other people.
Yeah.
And so taking that perspective of actually looking away from you at other people, at other things in life around you was really appealing and I guess helpful for me. And then I got a movie and, you know.
That's so cool. That's so cool.
The back of that. Right.
You always stayed in Canada, but not always. You did go to LA for 3 years.
Yeah.
And I know you did these movies that were like, shoot them up, bang them out, you know, and all this stuff and all this, you know, US stuff. Yeah. And eventually it wasn't making you happy. And you can't really tell us about that because that did lead to you meeting the love of your life. So it was serendipity.
Yeah. I was there in Los Angeles. And when I first went down, within 5 weeks, I was having a fitting and Edith Head's one of the most famous costume designers
from
all the great movies in her old dressing room. They were saying this was Edith Head's dressing room with the mirrors and the couches and the living room at Paramount Studio. Wow. I was cast. I negotiated more money than I'd ever seen before. for this series. And it was a rock 'em up, shoot 'em up. I had an Uzi machine gun in it, you know. All that kind of thing. Met some fun people. It was a total disaster. It was like bad. It was just didn't work. So I thought, oh, okay, that's the way it works. You go boom. And then you kind of get on the circuit. But I met some wonderful things, all wonderful people, some other actors. Canadians were down there at the same time, like Wendy Crewson and all that gang. And did a play. I remember doing a play. Thought, okay, I'll do a play. And Jeff Goldblum was like one of the producers of the play.
Oh my God.
Beverly Hills Playhouse and like Drew Barrymore came to see it and John Travolta and, you know, came back. So all these things you go, oh my God, there are these people. And it's like, so it was kind of in a way, because sometimes as Canadians, you think, oh, they're different than us. You know, they must kind of be spangled in gold. But then no, you know, John Travolta's kind of shy. Oh my God, he's just a guy, right? So it was really good to kind of see that world and all of that. But it's a tough one. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very tough one.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Then I met Seton, my husband, my future husband, Seton down there because as Canadians, we were pretty close knit, you know, bunch. So if something was going on, we all kind of celebrated. And he and his company, Atlantis Films at that time, was nominated for an Oscar. So, of course, all the Canadians, you know, had a big party. We all party, and then somehow we got invited to the dinner afterwards.
Oh, wow.
It was a good time. We all celebrated.
I think that must have been love at first sight. You know, I also read something. My daughter is a musical theater actress living in New York, Lily Liebrack, wow. Beautiful singer and musical theater actor. And she's doing it, but everything you're saying is so true.
Yeah.
And I think another thing I wondered about you is you've always been, and I've read this about you, and I've seen this even in meeting you, you're just a positive person, but you've also had your share of heartache. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if in your imaginary life as a little girl, if that helped you during your adolescence when you had to deal with the pain of your parents' separation. Mm-hmm. I can just relate to this because I was 3 years old when my parents got divorced, and mm-hmm. it was unheard of in my day.
Yeah, for sure.
1960s, yeah. Not happening.
So mine was one of the first. Nobody else's. Yeah, you were pretty like, what?
Yeah. What is that? What does that word even mean? I think I called it, I'm divorced with a B. I didn't even know how to say the word. So what was that like for you? And do you think that maybe helped you, having that experience helped you as an actor, made you more aware of what people go through, of being sensitive to others, of knowing how to deal with heartache? Like, how did that experience impact?
Some people will say, I don't know if I believe that's just there. You need a therapist. I'm not saying you need a therapist. It's like, no, I'm an actor. You know, I can work something through with that. You know, I think obviously it's only your life. Like, I can only bring what I know. I can research what a stockbroker does or a lawyer or a doctor or that kind of thing. But ultimately, you do have to pull on your own emotional information and knowledge. And we have a friend who was a producer. He said, God, I could never be a writer. My life's been too good. I haven't suffered.
I have nothing to write about.
You have to have something to draw on. Otherwise, you'd be pretty boring.
It's true. It's so true. You also said a wonderful thing in your advice to actors, and I loved it. And I think it's pretty Canadian, but I think it's also pretty universal. When asked, I think it was during your film, Drifting Snow, in which the director of that film attributes you for making it all possible, for getting some of the cast members, for making it happen. And you said that the magic word is collaboration. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that? Because I think it's so true.
Absolutely. And that's what's always drawn me in a way to being an actor. I love being a part of creating something with others, as opposed to, like, I've never done a one-woman show. I don't even know how I would do it. Or it's not about I'm the star. And that's never been the appeal for me of being an actor. I've always loved being a part of creating something, you know, not being solo, but being a part of that with other actors, with reacting, with acting opposite them and getting something from them and being able to give back with directors, if the directors are good. Sometimes if they're bad, you have to enjoy it. And realizing you're a part of that collective. And at the end of the day, that's what ensures if it's successful or not, because everybody has their job to do. And if we're all doing it right, then hopefully you've created something beautiful together, right?
Lovely. Was that your experience on Drifting Snow? It looked awfully cold up there.
It was really cold, and it was really like a stripped down, like teeny, teeny, teeny crew. And then God bless Colin Mockery for agreeing to play my husband in it.
I couldn't get over this. So Colin was on this show. I just think of Colin as a comedian and as an improv guy and as the loveliest guy. We had a wonderful old time on this program. And I was shocked.
Yeah, no, and who? And I listened to Flash at that because there's something very soulful about him.
He's
funny, of course, because he's brilliant.
Yes.
But I thought, no, I think because the husband is a bit of a ghostly and she's widowed. So you want a little bit of, there's something just very soulful.
Yes.
About him. Plus he's funny as Dave, but aside from that. But
Must have been a hoot. That must have been a hoot. What was Sharon Stone like? I know you have a good story, but you never say it on camera. It's more of a behind the scenes thing.
I'm not going to say too much. Except I ended up shooting in Malta on a cliffside with her.
Okay. We talked off the
very, top. Very beautiful. Very beautiful.
Okay. We talked about this vineyard and the fact that you bought a farm and you and Seton purchased 15 acres of land and this farmhouse, and you called your fledgling estate at the time Closs & Chase Vineyards. And first of all, is the barn still purple? We're going to come right back and hear all about the vineyard, the color of the barn, and more when we come back after this short commercial break. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio AM 740, and we're here with actress Sonia Smits. And just before the break, we were talking about your vineyard, Closs & Chase, and I asked you if the barn is still purple.
Yep, it is.
That's great.
And it's actually funny because people now identify it, with the purple barn. Like, that's the identification. We can never change that. Yeah.
So the barn was owned by the Clausen family, and it was renovated to house the original winemaking facility and the tasting room, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm just wondering if you can tell us more about Deborah Paskus, who was very involved in the winery. And how did this all evolve, and how did this all come to be?
The whole thing evolved because, see, my husband and I always loved wine, and we loved going to vineyards. And Deborah Paskus was a friend that I met actually through sailing. And she's the first person I knew that she was very glamorous and worked in the advertising area or industry. But then she went off to, like, Guelph or something to study viticulture. I said, what? Who studies viticulture? Like, what is that? You know, here in Ontario. And then she ended up making some really, like, beautiful wine, like a small amount, very beautiful wine. Mm-hmm. And we became fans of hers as a winemaker, that we were as a friend as well. And then she came to us because we liked her wine, and she sat in our living room and she said, I have an idea. It's like, okay, starting a vineyard, and I have the land, I know where it is, and it's in Prince Edward County, which Seton knew better than me. I said, where is that? And we had to go on the Friday because it was for sale.
Oh dear.
Okay. And we went there, and there was an old barn on it that was just kind of a cornfield, an old barn with a, like, a old car in it and the hay and the hay mound. And we went and we brought our kids.
Wow.
And we got home and we decided we were going to go for it. We were going to, because we were, you know, ignorance is bliss. We had no idea what was involved. So we said, okay, sure, let's do that. Why not? And I was putting my daughter to bed that night, and I said to her, you know, she said, I'm like, this is me, I'm going to have a pony. I went, no, honey, but maybe in 20 years, you'll have a really nice glass of wine.
I have to tell you about this wine, and I've been really enjoying it as I've been sitting here, and I can't believe I'm drinking wine in an interview. I don't usually do this, but I thought it would be nice. I love the freshness of this wine and the minerality that I think really comes from the county.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
It's just lovely.
Because it's all limestone, because that all used to be the sea, right? So there's literally, you'll find in the fields limestone with shells and stuff like in it. And that's similar to Burgundy in France, right?
Yes.
Which has that limestone, clay and limestone.
Oh, wow.
And that's why the county's become quite well known for the Burgundian style. So Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, and in this case, what you're drinking is a Pinot Gris, which loves that minerality that's in the stones.
It's, you know, so crisp and light and lovely. Like, I highly recommend it, everybody. I'm drinking Closs & Chase Pinot Gris, like Ray in French, G-R-I-S, 2023 is the year. Yeah.
And so that's as simple, that the Pinot Gris is like the unoaked. And then, so the Chardonnay, we do oak, so you've got the French barrels, and it's bigger, richer, and the Pinot Noirs are really coming along quite beautifully, too. But it's, you know, We celebrated our 25th anniversary.
Wow.
And when we started, there were just a few.
Three of them at the time. Now there's 50, right? There's 50 in the county.
The growth has been quite amazing. But it's a lot of people who, a lot of hand work, because that's how we have to work the fields. A lot of people working very hard to create what goes into those bottles.
Wow. But you've become a connoisseur. And again, I wrote this, that I love the parallel that you've drawn between acting in the early days of Canadian dramatic television and winemaking. Because at the beginning, no one had an idea when you're playing Carrie Barr, what's an episodic series in Canada look like? And I think that must have been a similar thing. Yeah. How did you learn? Did you just read a lot, ask questions, go to Tuscany?
Well, no, because I don't claim to know how, but I've learned a lot. And that's part of, I think, the enjoyment of life is learning, right?
Of course.
So you go along with people who know more than you, and then you accumulate a bit of knowledge along the way. But I would not say I would know even how to make wine, you know?
Yeah.
I know some of the efforts that are involved, and I know some years are better than others. And with the full circle for me with the farm is like, you know, as a farmer, you're always worried about the weather.
Yes.
You say it's a nice sunny day. Well, it could rain, you know.
Totally.
And now it's like, you know, it's good. So far, it's good. It's been going so far, but until the grapes are harvested, you know.
And there's that positive piece in you. That's what helps you as well. And then, that was incredible. And I love that you played some wonderful roles in the last couple of years, mm-hmm. like your role as Kate in the 2023 drama Better Days, directed by Joan Carr Wiggins. What an incredible mm-hmm. person. Mm-hmm. And it's about how your character, Kate, loses her husband, withdraws into a world of vodka and grief and Halloween costumes. And after this character befriends three lonely teenagers, her friends and family are appalled, yet she's discovering the woman she might become. Can you tell us what your experience was like making that 2023 film? Share it with our listeners.
It was pretty crazy because Joan approached me with this and, you know, it was a very, you know, small budget film. And Joan's a wonderful writer and she writes roles for mature women that are going through something. And then she'll approach someone. She's had some wonderful, like, British actresses like Juliet Stevenson and then, you know, Marcia Gay Harden, you know, and she approaches them. And in this case, she approached me with a script that was like funny and kind of moving and kind of weird too, you know, strange in a way. And then you say, okay, we'll do it on very little budget. And but her writing is clever and it's not sentimental. Mm-hmm. There's some good sort of truths in it and it's sort of funny. And I wasn't sure how it was going to work out. I had no idea, but sort of leap of faith. And I'm very, very pleased with how the film worked out. Yeah.
And then you did another film, A Mother's Lie in 2024. Did you enjoy making a thriller? Do you ever get scared by the films you make, not when you're making them, but after you watch them at the screenings or under the covers?
Well, kids don't watch it. Oh, I was so cool and then I was pushing people down the stairs. Yes. That was my Joan Crawford.
Your Joan Crawford here. Are you more selective, Sonia, of the films and the projects that you accept?
I try to be. I just recently did something that I really enjoyed, and it's a second season of a series called Sisters.
Wow.
And it's on Crave right now, if I can say that. And it's the first season was shot in Ireland, and the second season is shot here in Toronto. And I just did that this spring. And it was cool because it's created by two actresses created it. And I seem to like my more successful or happier things are often things that are created by women, quite frankly.
Nice.
And these two actresses, they met at theater school when they were 19, total opposites. One's, you know, Canadian, Jewish kind of upper crust character, like from like a lawyer and the actress herself. And then the other girl's Irish. And so they never get along. They're like definitely very different and they became fast friends. And they created this series that now in their 30s they're doing. And it's of a Canadian girl who's looking for her birth father. Her mother dies and she's going to find her birth father. And then she discovers her Irish family that are kind of raucous, hard living, Irish, and she's a bit of this uptight kind of boy, still girl, right? And a fish out of water. And so it was a wonderful, just 6 episodes.
Oh.
So, and then the second season is set here in Canada, where all the Irish people come over to meet all the Canadians.
Oh, love. Is this available yet? Is this out?
The first season is out now.
Awesome.
And then the second season is coming out. But I had a blast because they were so creative. They write wonderful parts. And I played, of course, a mother-in-law from hell.
It sounds so good. Everyone check out Sisters. I will tell you more at the end of the show about how you can do that. I love that.
So I just did that because I thought, it's nasty mother-in-law, but it was funny and it was moving. She says all inappropriate things constantly.
So like, fun.
And it was a lot of fun.
You've done it all, Sonia. You've done stage, film, television. Do you have a favorite medium?
I think I always used to love theater because that's where I started from. And I love the rehearsal process of theater, that you're kind of just going in basically in a bare room and you've got a few weeks, just the actors kind of working on what you're creating just there. And then all the other things, the technical stuff gets layered in, like the sets and the lighting and all of that. But it's just the actors. And I love the purity of that. Mm-hmm. But I think as a performer, I think I've done a lot more. I feel I'm more suited in some way to a camera, you know, to that kind of working environment, like as opposed to, let's say, your daughter on Broadway with the big stage and all of that kind of thing. I think I need a bit more of an intimate, an intimate, a small stage, a small setting.
Nice.
Or a camera.
What is your secret, Sonia, to surviving 40 years in the acting industry with truly grace, grit, aplomb, beauty, class, all of it? What's your secret?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I wish I knew what the secret was. I think you have to stay true to yourself and try and just work with people who are good people and something that you believe in if you have the opportunity. And sometimes you make mistakes. Sometimes you go, I think they are. And it's like, oh, shoot. You know, they're not. And then you just kind of try and get through that. But I think generally people are well-intentioned and, you know, you're all trying to, you all have your love and you're pursuing that. And just trying to tell a story. You're just trying to tell a story.
Tell the story. You tell it so well. Yeah. You tell it so well. Like, I believe you every time you're on a stage or on film or on camera, I believe you. There's a question that we ask everyone at the end of the show. And of course, we're going to ask it to you as well. What is bliss for Sonia Smith?
Bliss, my moments of bliss, I often find in nature.
Okay.
That's where I do. I'm not a religious person, but I move to tears with beauty in nature. That's my bliss. Yeah.
Lovely. Nature. What a perfect place to be experiencing that nature, exactly where you are. That's so lovely. I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. It's truly been an honor to have you here.
Thank you. You're wonderful. Thank you very much.
What is the best way for people to contact you and connect with you? Actors don't like this question because they never know. Call my agent, they say. But to connect, what is the best way for people to connect with you on social media?
I don't have a social media.
You don't have a social media. I'll have to direct them in the right place. Okay.
Also, Moss and Chase Vineyards.
Nice.
Come see
I
my
I like movie. That. I yeah. love that. Each week we spotlight a fabulous person like Sonia Smith, who is living their bliss. So if you're an actor, author, artist, yoga, meditation, mindfulness expert, therapist, life coach, actor, dancer, writer, really anyone who's found and is following their bliss, we'd love to hear from you. We also love to feature singer-songwriters on this show. If you are one, please reach out to us. You can do that by writing to us at fyb@findingyourbliss.com. And for those of you who don't know, I'm also the bliss coach. That means I can help you get unstuck, gain clarity, and find your passion and purpose. Write to us at findingyourbliss.com/coaching. I'm also on Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. And of course, you can always follow us at The Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. I would like to thank our wonderful guest, actress Sonia Smits, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Mag Ruffman, Siobhan Kiley, associate producer Chelsea Lockstedt, producer Eva Shabatai, Olivia Vigiani, audio engineer Juliana Yannizziello, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown-Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center, and also to our segment sponsor, Ashford Cleaners. For everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.